Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Justin Chekai, who's serving as our worship associate, our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, our music director, Hal Walker, and a great number of incredible musicians from the congregation who have wonderful music to share with you today. And we also have a special announcement this morning.
Why you should go, because we still need your help and we need donations. So to save time for no procrastination, let's raise some funds as we have a celebration. Thank divine spirit for Kent Country Joy. Well, we're going to have fun and we're going to look at our words. We're going to have food and plenty of fun. Gluten-free and vegan. Enough for everyone. Silent auctions and an auctioneer. Homemade beer, because we still need the funds and we need donations. So this ain't time for no procrastination. We gotta raise money and we have a celebration! Woo! Woo! Thank you! Thank you, my spirit, for Kent Country Joy. Well, the service auction is Saturday night. And if you still want to help out, that'll be alright, because we actually need an adult babysitter. A paid position for an adult babysitter. Committee members, if any committee members from the auction are here, would you please stand? They're probably all downstairs in the meeting, so there was it worked the first service, so there's one. So Jen is the person to see if you want to lend a hand, because they still need your help and we need your donations. We gotta raise funds and we have a celebration. Woo! Thank you, my spirit, for Kent Country Joy.
Service auction we have every year is a great deal of fun. It's next Saturday night, the United Church of Christ in Kent. As we kindle the light of this chalice flame, may it spark the light in us and lift us up today, opening to the beauty of the light streaming through the windows, the beauty of the music, and the beauty of this gathered community.
Jesus. think that we all can agree that we are very blessed by the talent in this church. Okay, so I have a confession to make. Up until last night, I was not a fan of the concept or the word blessing. Now, that might shock you, considering I obviously volunteered to assist in a service called Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, but we'll get to that more in a minute. So my reason for the dislike of the word goes back to my upbringing in the Catholic Church. The premise of the Catholic tradition is that it relies on adhering to strict rules for you to obtain blessing, and also the eternal blessing, or the blessing of eternal life in heaven. So it really didn't matter if you were a good person, or if you sacrificed yourself for the betterment of others, or if you lived a morally upright life. If you didn't follow the rules, you were not worthy of being blessed, and therefore you were not living a sacred life. Well, I took exception to that way of thinking at a very young age, and unfortunately that concept of blessing has carried a negative connotation since then. So again, why the heck am I up here assisting in this service? Well, to be honest, it sort of stemmed from a scheduling error, and I may have actually volunteered for the wrong service. Ironically, on another note, two of my other services have been Luck as a Blessing and Blessings and Curses. So all that being said, last night I had a bit of a revelation, and I sort of started to look deeper into the overall concept of blessing and not just what I had been taught. So in my preparation for this service over the course of the years, this church has helped me realize the true meaning of the word blessing. I've learned that the old rules do not apply, that it is about your character and your actions that actually open the door to that sacred life. So if my little miscalculation had never occurred, I may not have been able to open myself up to this new way of thinking. And that alone has been a wonderful blessing.
This morning we're looking at the hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, from all different sorts and points of view. You've just heard the original version as our beautiful opening music. The Unitarian Universalist version from our hymnal will be sung later in the service. It is an old and notable hymn, a favorite of many, including our own Hal. It even has its own Wikipedia entry. But first, a bit of religious education. Please open your gray hymnals to number 126, and there you will find, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. And if you look down at the lower left-hand corner, you will see that this is where the attribution for our hymns is always given. And you'll note that the words of this hymn were written by two different people, and then the music by John Wyeth. The first verse was written by Robert Robinson, who lived a long time ago. The second and third verses were written by Eugene B. Navius, who was born in 1928, not so very long ago. And you will also notice that there's a small chalice next to Eugene Navius's name. This indicates in our hymnal that person is a Unitarian Universalist, is or was a Unitarian Universalist or a Unitarian or a Universalist. So if you look ahead to number 127, you'll see that for this hymn, neither the composer or the lyricist is a Unitarian or was a Unitarian Universalist. Look back on number 123, Spirit of Life, and you'll see that Carolyn McDade is a Unitarian Universalist. So we're done with our hymnals. So we do have a long and rich history of changing the lyrics to old hymns. And yes, we do get some criticism for it. But the way I like to think of it is that we are reluctant to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We recognize the beauty and the value of these traditional old hymns, but we feel the urge to change the words in order that their beauty more closely aligns with our values. And personally, I think this is a good thing. But anyhow, getting back to our hymn, you saw that Unitarian Universalist, the Reverend Eugene Navius, changed the words to the second and third verses of Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. Gene Navius died this past August at the age. He was among the first ministers of religious education to serve our faith tradition. He was ordained as a minister at the First Unitarian Church of Cleveland, and he served many years there as the minister of religious education. When I first met Gene, it was toward the end of his rich and fruitful career. He was then serving as the director of religious education for the Unitarian Universalist Association. He was warm and accessible and very encouraging to me when I was a young and eager director of religious education. He was a strong and early advocate of professional development and was instrumental in creating many of the programs that shaped me as a religious educator. And not only has Eugene Navius touched my life, but he has touched the lives of many of you sitting in the sanctuary this morning. Gene's works and attitudes about religious education are so very pivotal in shaping the programs of religious education that we use to this day, the programs that we are using this very morning. He was the creator of About Your Sexuality, the program which evolved into Our Whole Lives, or OWL, which is our comprehensive sexuality education, a shining star among the RE offerings at our church. And I really like the Unitarian Universalist perspective that Gene brought to verses 2 and 3, which the adults will sing later. His words remind us all that we, with our actions and our words, have the capacity and the responsibility to be sources of blessings and justice and peace and love for each other and for the world.
There's a link between our service last Sunday and this Sunday. Last Sunday, I shared a poem from Robert Frost, who was the state poet of Vermont many years ago. And our wisdom words this morning are from his successor, state poet of Vermont, Galway Connell, who died on Tuesday. He's one of my favorite poets, and so I wanted to share a work of his with you this morning in honor and celebration of his life and his work. And I chose this one especially for all of those who are struggling with illness or infirmity, and for those who love them. This is his poem, Parkinson's Disease. While spoon-feeding him with one hand, she holds his hand with her other hand, or rather lets it rest on top of his, which is permanently clenched shut. When he turns his head away, she reaches around and puts in the spoonful blind. He will not accept the next morsel until he has completely chewed this one. His bright squint tells her he finds the shrimp she has just put in delicious. She strokes his head very slowly, as if to cheer up each hair sticking up from its root in his stricken brain. Standing behind him, she presses her cheek to his, kisses his jowl, and his eyes seem to stop seeing and do nothing but emit light. Could heaven be a time, after we are dead, of remembering the knowledge flesh had from flesh? The flesh of his face is hard, perhaps from years spent facing down others until they fell back, and harder still, from all the while frowning and beaming and worrying and shouting and probably letting go in rages. His face softens into a kind of quizzical wince, as if one of the other animals were working at getting the knack of the human smile. While picking up a cookie, he uses both thumb tips to grip it and push it against an index finger to secure it so that he can lift it. She takes him to the bathroom, and when they come out, she is facing him, walking backwards in front of him, holding his hands, pulling him when he stops, reminding him to step when he forgets and starts to pitch forward. She is leading her old father into the future as far as they can go. And she is walking him back into her childhood, where she stood in bare feet on the toes of his shoes, and they foxtrotted on this same rug. I watch them closely. She could be teaching him the last steps that one day she may teach me. At this moment, he glints and shines as if it will be only a small dislocation for him to pass from this paradise into the next. We'll keep silence for a few moments together. Just this day stretched before us with its heart-bursting joys and heart-breaking sorrows, may we be open to the fullness of our lives. Just this day stretched before us, filled with its delights and chores and demands, may we be open to all of it, to the fullness of our lives. Just this day stretched before us, which we did not earn or order, this day which we cannot command or control, this day which was given to us like every day as a gift, may we be open to its fullness and grateful for our blessings. Amen. Our first reading comes from the poet and essayist Alice Walker. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Did you ever understand this? If my spirit was poor, how could I enter heaven? Was I depressed? Understanding editing, I see how a comma, removed or inserted with careful plan, can change everything. I was reminded of this when a young man in Tunisia, desperate to live and humiliated for trying, set himself ablaze. I felt uncomfortably warm, as if scalded by his shame. I do not have to sell vegetables from a cart as he did, or live in narrow rooms too small for spacious thought. And at this late date, I do not worry that someone will remove every single opportunity for me to thrive. Still, I'm connected to, inseparable from this young man. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Jesus was, as usual, talking about solidarity, about how we join with others in spirit, feel the world and suffering the same as them. This is the kingdom of owning the other as self, the self as other, that transforms grief into peace and delight. I and you might enter the heaven of right here through this door. In this spirit, knowing we are blessed, we might remain poor.
Our second reading comes from Rebecca Parker. Choose to bless the world. Your gifts, whatever you may discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, and waiting. Any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question. What will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, anesthetization, or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting that what is sacred will not be defiled. For those who bless the world with their life and their love is a gesture of thanks for this beauty and this rage. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude to search for the sources of power and grace, native wisdom, healing, and liberation. But more, the choice will draw you into community, the endeavor shared, the heritage passed on, the companionship of struggle, the importance of keeping faith, the ritual of life and praise, the comfort of human friendship, the company of earth, the chorus of life welcoming you. None of us alone can save the world. Together, that is another possibility waiting.
So I asked the first service, I have to ask you, any of you count this as one of your favorite hymns?
Yes.
A few people. I loved it before this service, but now I love it even more. I came across some really curious contradictions this week as I was trying to learn more about the writing of this hymn and the story of its author, Robert Robinson. The basic facts of his early life were the same in all the sources I consulted. He was born in 1735 in Norfolk, England. His father died when he was young, and thus his mother, a single mother, had no choice but to apprentice him, and he was sent to live in London at the age of 15, apprenticed to a barber. From that point on, the story varies depending upon who's doing the telling. According to the Dictionary of Hymnology, which was compiled in the late 1800s, Robinson was a bookish boy who wasn't well suited to hairdressing. But according to the contemporary United Methodist professor of sacred music, Robinson was something of a hoodlum who fell in with a gang of juvenile delinquents when he landed in London. Which is it? All the sources agree that Robinson was eventually converted on account of the powerful preaching of George Whitefield, which he encountered at a revival. He became a Methodist pastor, and he wrote this hymn, "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing," a few years later in celebration of his newfound faith. But within a couple of years, he became converted yet again, this time to the view that baptism should be reserved for adults who could make informed choices. And so he became baptized again and converted to becoming a Baptist, and went on to serve a Baptist congregation in the English countryside for 30 years. During that time, he became known as an eloquent preacher and also authored several scholarly works and had a very successful career as a Baptist minister. And so when he retired, the Baptists of London invited him to come to their city and write a history of their church. And then this is where the stories diverge again. When he returned to London, he became acquainted with the work of the Unitarian minister Joseph Priestley. The writer who characterized the young Robinson as bookish concludes that Unitarians have made overly much of Robinson's association with Priestley on what he calls exceedingly slender grounds. Other sources, including a contemporary Baptist publication, charge that Robinson was so persuaded by Priestley's views that he in fact converted a third time to Unitarianism. As this author tells it, Robinson's life ended in a shipwreck of heresy, thereby proving true the last verse of that hymn he had written so many years ago, "Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love." Still other sources acknowledge Robinson's association with Priestley and with Unitarianism, but leave the question as to the allegiances at the end of his life open for speculation. Okay, that's an interesting story, you may be thinking, but what does that have to do with us? Well, I think it has a lot to do with us. But in order to understand what exactly, we have to unpack this hymn a little bit. In Robinson's theology, God is the fount of every blessing. That would have remained true even if he had converted to Unitarianism, because Unitarians at the time all understood themselves to be Christians. And among Christians, there was no debate about God being the source of every blessing. The debate was about the nature of God, with Unitarians proclaiming God's unity in contrast to the theology of the Trinity. This view was so heretical that those who held it were ridiculed and condemned. And there's at least a hint of this condemnation in some of the writings about Robinson, suggesting that perhaps in the end he had chosen to reject the fount of every blessing, thereby stepping outside the circle of God's love and mercy. And I think that this is something we can relate to, because in our own world, when something terrible happens to someone, it's not uncommon for a person to want to dig back in their history and find out if there's a kernel of that planted way back when they were young. In fact, was that there all along? And it seems to me that's what people are trying to do with Robinson. Was he a bookish, devout young man? Or was he a hoodlum from the very beginning? All these years later, we sing Robinson's song, and if a Unitarian Universalist were to write its history, we would have to say that in the end, it didn't really matter whether Robinson changed his theological views at the end of his life, because when it comes to blessing, it doesn't matter what a person believes. One of the central commitments of Unitarian Universalism is the belief that everyone is blessed. Many Unitarian Universalists love the way that the poem Outwitted by the turn of the 20th century poet Edwin Markham puts it. He expresses his view this way: "He drew a circle that shut me out, heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in." This commitment has its roots in foundational Unitarian and Universalist claims. Markham was a Universalist. Claims that we cherish still. Namely, God is one and God is love. Today we often say things like, we come, all of us, from one source. And we say things like, the same light shines upon all the world. These are humanist iterations of expressing that foundational Unitarian claim, God is one. And we honor that foundational Universalist claim, God is love, by our faith in the inherent worth and dignity of all people, and by our belief that there are many ways to live a good life, and by our insistence that all life has already been blessed. We believe in original blessing. And in fact, that's the name of the very newest Unitarian Universalist congregation, which has opened in Brooklyn, New York, Original Blessing Unitarian Universalist Church. I read a sermon recently by my colleague Nancy McDonald Ladd, in which she talks about the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. She points out that the media and pundits have been very concerned with questions about Michael Brown's behavior the night that he was killed. Did he steal cigars from the convenience store? Was he high on drugs? Did he threaten the police officers? By focusing our national discourse on his perceived culpability or lack thereof, McDonald Ladd writes, we seem to be asking as a nation if Michael Brown did or did not deserve to die that night. And we wrap ourselves into two deadly ways of thinking, she continues, which run counter to everything our tradition teaches us. Namely, that some people deserve life and safety, while others, being guilty in some form, do not. And two, that there is a right kind of person, inherently blessed, and by extension, a wrong kind. I think her observations are so astute, and I couldn't help but think about them again when I read the speculations about our hymn's author. In their stories about him, the writers seem to be trying to conclude whether his heart was, in fact, still tuned to the fount of every blessing at the end of his life. Was he in the circle or out? Was he blessed at the end, or was he unblessed? It's a question that's all too common in our world today, especially when it comes to oppression in its many forms. In her sermon, McDonald Ladd points out that we ask these questions all the time in our society. We ask them about people of color, and we ask them about women who are victims of violence and about immigrants. Is he the kind of black man to fear? Is she the kind of woman who is asking for it? Are they the kinds of immigrants who are going to steal our jobs? And to these, I'd add questions about poor people and people living with addiction and people who have been convicted of crimes. Is she the kind of poor person who deserves help, the worthy poor? Is he the kind of addict who deserves another chance? Are they the kind of convicts who deserve compassion? So many questions we ask to determine who belongs inside the circle and who should remain on the outside. The blessed are welcome. The unblessed are told to remain outside, told to get a job, to go home. You only get what you deserve. Unitarian Universalism teaches us to resist these messages. Our faith proclaims that every life matters and is worthy of dignity and respect, no exceptions. We cannot separate people into the blessed and the unblessed. We're all originally blessed by the same source of life from which we have all come and to which we will all one day return. In this, we are united. It doesn't matter what color you are or where you come from or how much money you have or how your brain works or what mistakes you have made or where you live or what you believe. When it comes to original blessing, none of that matters. But when it comes to the structures of our society, that kind of stuff matters an awful lot. Those kinds of qualities and characteristics can make an enormous difference. Unitarian Universalism tells us that we are called to help create a world in which the original blessing of every person is also recognized and affirmed by the structures of our society. In concrete terms, in our own society, this means resisting racism and sexism and classism and ableism and homophobia and transphobia and all the other kinds of oppression that beat people down. It also means supporting just and humane social policies that work for the rehabilitation of those who are troubled, who have made mistakes, and who have lost their way. Alice Walker says that this is about solidarity, about how we join with others and, in spirit, feel the world and suffering the same as them. Compassion is the bridge that makes that connection possible, and solidarity is the scaffolding upon which we can build our work for justice. Opening to compassion and practicing solidarity are two powerful spiritual resources we have to help us counter the divisions the world seems to want to create and maintain between the blessed and the unblessed. Like Robinson, I suspect that we're all a little prone to wander. In any given day, we face countless choices about what we'll conclude, and it's hard to live consistently all the time. It's hard to be 100% consistent in the application of our values. I know that I don't always succeed in aligning my choices, my life, with my vision. But when we sing Robinson's hymn, we can sing it as a prayer to bring us back to the truth of whence we come and how we are loved, every single one of us. Come, thou fount of every blessing, tune our hearts to sing thy grace. Streams of mercy never ceasing call for songs of loudest praise. Every day, another day to praise the gifts that we have been given. So let us sing and keep learning to love. Amen.
Upon it, mount of thy redeeming love. Here I raise my Ebenezer, hither by thy help I come, and I hope by safely to arrive at home. Jesus sought me when a stranger, wandering from the fold of God, me to rescue me from danger, interposed his precious blood. Grace, how great a debtor daily I'm constrained to be. Let thy goodness, like a fetter, bind my wandering heart to thee. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. Here's my heart, oh, take and seal it, seal it for thy courts above.
You are a good and loving people with many gifts to share. Take them out into the world. The world needs all the gifts you can give. Amen.